demands are that I take control of a situation that undermines the very foundation of this town. Electricity is the lifeblood of this valley. My first order of business is to restore that power at any cost. Then I'll deal with Smith. Basic strategy. Anyone who stands in my way is in direct violation of Eden's laws. I, not Smith, enforce those laws, and I will enforce them vigorously. Now, unless you want a bullet in your head, stand aside. A male voice yelled from the direction of the town square. Something was off here, but Barth was fixed. Once he had his jaws clamped down, nothing was going to dislodge him. David had seen the man break Claire Davis's jaw 2 years earlier when she'd been found stashing liquor in her house. Take it easy. I'm sure we can work something out. But I want this in front of the council. You hear me? Oh, I hear you all too well. Barth's right eye twitched. He slowly withdrew his gun and leveled it at David's forehead. The question is, did you hear me? Easy. I don't think you understand our situation here. The country's infrastructure is collapsing. Millions are going to die out there. A few might die in here. Smith is our terrorist, and we'll deal with him. But to do that, I need leverage. Your daughter is that leverage. I don't give a tick's whiskers if you live or die tonight, because, frankly, the survival of Eden has nothing to do with you. It does, however, depend on me. So I'm going to tell you one more time. We need the girl. Now. Stop this! Miranda brushed past David. Who do you think you are storming in here to take a young— Barth's gun bucked in his palm. The night air exploded with the sound of its discharge, cutting off Miranda's voice. Her head snapped back, and she dropped to the ground in a heap. It happened so quickly, so unreasonably, that David wasn't sure it had happened. Barth had shot Miranda? His mind refused to accept what he'd just seen. Extreme times, David, Barth said, gun trained on him again. Extreme measures. You can either move or join her. Barth! Someone was running toward them. Barth! David stepped back, eyes on Miranda's body. Blood was soaking into the gravel from the gaping wound on her head. Simon had come. He knew that. Barth had acted alone. He knew that as well. But he still couldn't get his mind working to process what any of it meant. When he lifted his head, he saw Simon staring down at the crumpled body. Simon's face flushed.
Have you gone mad? You have no right. You can't just go around killing innocent people.
Barth returned his stare, undisturbed. I have the right to do as the council orders.
This,
Simon snapped, stabbing his finger at Miranda's dead body,
was not what we discussed.
Actually, it was. You just weren't a part of that discussion. You gave up that right when you let Smith take the stand without opposition. Seeing as how you don't have the balls to stand up to Smith, Max and I agreed that task falls to me. I'll do whatever's necessary to end this threat. It's not the first dead body on our watch. Simon backhanded Barth full in the face.
How dare you?
The judge was taller by 4 inches, but Barth was a bull with twice his muscle. Despite the loud crack, his head didn't budge.
You have no idea what's really happening here.
The judge roared.
No idea. This is exactly what he wants. Don't you see that?
Barth stood still, as if for the first time considering he might have misjudged the situation. But David was no longer misjudging. The full horror of what had just happened crashed over him, and he felt his legs go weak.
You're playing right into his hands.
Simon stabbed at Barth's chest.
I will deal with Smith. Me, not you. Now get rid of her body. No one can know about this.
And if someone heard the shot?
Tell them you killed a coyote.
To David.
I'm sorry about this, David. I really am. I'm closing the hospital as of now and ordering martial law. No one leaves their house without authorization. And I mean no one. We have to get this under control.
What about the girl? David heard Barth ask.
The girl stays where she is until I speak to Smith. Now clean this up.
Chapter 16. Vlad Smith. This is what they called him, because this was the label he'd chosen as of late. His true name couldn't be put into words, but they all knew it, intimately. And he would see to it that they soon knew it as their own. Vlad stood on the roof of their church as a graying dawn edged into the far horizon like the coming of an ominous tide. Overhead, their sky was clogged with dark clouds. A light breeze tickled his skin, a sensation he relished. From this vantage point, he could see all of Eden, and beyond it, the trees and fields that butted up against the great cliffs that encircled the massive sinkhole. And beyond the cliffs, the rest of the world, blinded by crisis. He could see that as well, though not with his eyes. Not a single volt of juice flowed through Eden, not a glimpse of light, not a hint of power. Darkness, and darkness alone. If the tissue tops, now soundly asleep, only knew what was happening here in their little paradise. A rush of satisfaction flowed down Vlad's body, and he allowed himself to tremble with that sentiment. Human juice. Such a wonderful thing. Organism was only an algorithm. This much couldn't be disputed. He'd watched with curiosity as Barth, the pit bull among them, had yielded to his programming. Rochelle was a threat the man could deal with. So he would, if only to protect his security. Common sense. He'd gone after the girl earlier than Vlad expected, then killed the other tissue top, something else Vlad hadn't seen coming so soon. He may have underestimated Barth. Caution might be warranted. He couldn't allow the man to kill Rochelle. Following Miranda's early expiration, David had reacted as might be expected of any tissue top. He'd rushed to wake Rochelle, but then decided to leave her in peace, though he could find none for himself. He'd spent most of the night on his face in the living room, weeping into the carpet before settling into his armchair, blinding himself with bitterness. Blind. Blind as worms. All of them. Just like the rest of the world. Most of them, anyway. Truly, the only one who was even beginning to see in Eden was the girl, and this concerned him more than he'd anticipated. What happened to the others wasn't his concern. It was Rochelle he needed. Only Rochelle. How many years had he waited for the coming of the 49th after being dispatched to this world with the book? Too many to count. The plan had been simple. Prevent the 49th from finding all 5 seals before the appointed time by undermining her in this reality, not only in the other, thus ensuring her failure. To that end, this world had no clue what it was in for. Not only here in Eden, but far beyond. He'd known that she was the 49th the moment she'd been born in the other reality. The shift in his consciousness couldn't be denied, though he had to wait 5 more years for her to be born here. Blind. The irony was brilliant. This was his doing, naturally, first by tormenting her mother. Even more ironic was the fact that Rochelle had been born here, in a bubble called Eden, of all places. Some said there was no irony or coincidence, that the light only used the darkness to reveal its brilliance, The thought brought a shudder to his bones. He would prove them wrong. Curious, he'd tested her to see if she might write him into the book before understanding her power. As expected, this simple tack had failed, as had his second approach in the sanctuary. Now that she'd discovered the first seal and tasted the power of origin, one might think he'd suffered a blow. Not so. She would eventually use her power to save what she valued. There was still time. More than enough. As long as he found his way into the book before Rachelle found the first three seals, his purpose would remain intact. Vlad blew out a long breath, smoothed his greasy hair back with both hands, and pressed them lightly together, as if in prayer to the great cliffs before him. All organism was algorithm. It was time to change up the programming a bit. He spun around, strode for the access ladder, and quickly descended. The streets were dead at this early hour, and they would remain empty. The judge's martial law would see to that. He headed down the dotted lines on 3rd Street, dead center. He'd left his white jacket in the hospital's basement room, where he'd taken up residence. Other than his skin, he was now all black. Reconsidering the decision, he wondered if it might have been more interesting to wear the white jacket and sing at the top of his lungs for all to hear. Let them see their God in all his glory. It took Vlad less than 3 minutes to reach the Moses residence. Simon would be holed up in his safe room, hoping against hope that his battery-powered ham radio would allow him to make contact with the outside world. It wouldn't. Either way, the judge was concerned only in that he was in the way. The situation required a few tweaks. The front door was locked. Vlad gripped it with a firm hand, twisted hard, and heard the tumblers in the locking mechanism snap. He stepped in and closed the door behind him. Silence smothered the house. He made no attempt to walk with caution. The time for subtleties had passed. Truth be told, he enjoyed the sound of his shoes walking on the wooden floors. He entered the hall and tried the first door. A boy's room. Peter, sound asleep under his blanket, oblivious to the fact that he likely had less than a few days of life left on this earth. So sad. The next door opened to the young daughter's bedroom. She might survive. He hadn't decided yet. All of the children might survive. Lucky little brats. Or maybe not. Knowing now that the last door had to be the master bedroom, Vlad entered, closed the door behind him, and walked up to the king-size bed without so much as glancing to see if Hillary was still asleep. She lay under the covers, snoring softly. He'd chosen her for two reasons, the first being that she was Simon's wife, the second being that he required a particularly malleable brain for his purpose. All tissue tops, excepting the mystics, who knew their true identity, were compliant, of course. But some, like Hillary, were more easily programmed than others. Vlad leaned over the bed and slapped the top of her head with enough force to startle the dead. The woman grunted and jerked up, eyes wide. "Hello, Hillary. So nice to see you this fine morning. I see that your husband has abandoned you again." She gaped at him, clinging to her covers, and she was about to scream, so he clamped his hand over her mouth and shoved her back down into the pillow. "Hush, hush." He touched his forefinger to her lips and held her firm as she struggled. "Shh, shh, shh. It's Vlad. Vlad Smith. You remember me, right? I'm the new god in town. God will only hurt you if you don't listen to him and accept his gifts, so I need you to shut up and listen." Eyes like saucers, she quieted. The fear of God talk was over the top, but with her kind, it sometimes actually worked. I'll let go of your mouth if you promise me you'll listen quietly. Nod if you agree. She faltered for only a moment, then complied. Good. He lifted his hand from her mouth and nodded his appreciation when she remained silent. Are you listening? Her head bobbed once more. Even better. Now. He sat down on the bed next to her. I'm tempted to seduce you, Hillary. I really am. Just for the fun of it. He cocked his head and looked at her. Do you think I'd succeed? She was still in too much shock to respond with more than a tiny squeaking sound, so he helped her out. Of course I would. Few women manage to resist my gentle charm and surprising understanding of their deepest longing to be heard and loved. He let his words sink in. I'm not sure you even know what it's like to be truly loved. Not the way Simon loves you, with all his conditions. Be this, do that, don't do that, or else. That's not love, sweetheart. That's called conditional manipulation. Nearly all marriages are based on it. Is yours? She blinked. Never mind. Actually, I don't know how to love unconditionally, either. I'm bound by polarity, just like you. So I'm going to cut to the chase. Fair enough? She was still staring. He slapped her on the cheek, just hard enough to get her attention. Say yes.
Yes.
You see how easily the fear of punishment manipulates. Hillary still wasn't getting the hang of things, so he slapped her again. Answer me when I ask a question. Yes, she said. Vlad felt a stab of pity for the poor thing. She'd been lied to her whole life. The thing about humans that few of them realized, they were powerful beyond imagination. Law just blinded them to it. The thought of that power bothered him, and he made a quick decision, no longer desiring to play his game with her. Not here. Not this way. Close your eyes, sweetheart. Do as I say. She looked unsure. Go on. Just close your eyes. Her eyes fluttered shut. Vlad slugged her right in the temple with enough force to knock her out cold. She slumped back, at peace. His small gift to her. He grabbed her nightshirt and dragged her body from the bed, across the floor into the door. There, he scooped her up with one arm, hiked her over his shoulder, and walked from the house the way he'd come in. I'll have you back in a couple hours, he muttered, just before curfew. Plenty of time to flip some switches. Chapter 17. While Shadow Man's darkness was blinding minds in Utah, I was crossing deserts and mountains with Talia, my teacher in another world. Earth, 2,000 years in the future. For 5 more days we traveled, and each night I knew the rambutan fruit, which silenced my mind so I wouldn't dream. On each of those days, Talia asked only one thing of me. Watch. Look. Lift up your eyes. Change your cognitive perception. Or, as it was written in ancient Greek, practice metanoia. Reclaim your innocence. Become like an infant, a little child who hasn't yet learned not to believe the impossible. Because, in truth, nothing is impossible. I tried. And when I tried too hard, Talia told me to try by not trying. That didn't help me either. So I must confess, for those first 5 days, I mostly learned that I couldn't see whatever he was seeing. This didn't seem to disturb Talia in the least. He would offer me a slight grin and wink. When the student is ready, the teaching will appear. You aren't ready yet, dear daughter. You have more lies to unlearn. Each day, he would find a suitable spot to practice ceremony, which was only a formal form of metanoia, he said. Each day he would casually bend the world in some small way that left me awestruck, whether it be lighting a fire without a spark, or calling a bird to sit on his shoulder, or finding water where there was no spring. All so I would know it was possible. I learned about many things those first 5 days. Was he a magician? Elion forbid, he said. Magic was done in polarity by attributing special power to special words. Religions used words this way. It worked on occasion, but even when it did, it was belief in the power behind the words, not the words themselves, that carried weight.
Take the name of God, Talia said. There are many ways to say God in different languages.
Which word has power? Many tribal Christians in ancient Earth call God Allah Nogoba, meaning God our Father.
Do the words Allah Nogoba have less power than Elion, our Father, or God our Father, or Origin, or Source?
None have power in themselves. These are just labels that represent God. Only identification with the essence beyond the label can shift polarity. Attachment to specific words is an attachment to magic.
We don't use magic.
I learned why some sacred teachings seemed to be lies, but were not. For example, whatever you ask in my name will be done, Yeshua taught. There was no exception to this, Talia said. Ever. In his name meant in his identity. But few ever asked in that identity because they didn't know themselves in that identity. They didn't recognize themselves in that identity. They didn't ask in his identity. Instead, they asked in their earthen vessel identity, using the word Yeshua or Jesus or Justin like a magical incantation with little to no effect. Faith in that identity, rather than the earthen vessel self, he said, was the actual evidence of the unseen, the very substance of it. But few had true faith in the unseen. Their faith was in the seen, the world of polarity, which thus mastered them. How can I awaken to my identity in Christi? I asked. He winked at me.
You will see.
I learned that the Horde were still giving chase, less than a day behind us now. Jacob, son of Kurong, wasn't one to be denied. I learned that my body had retained the muscle memory of the ancient Roush arts in a way that surprised even Talia. The movements taught by certain elite Roush who were highly skilled in aerial combat with Shataiki were like a dance to him. They came back to me quickly as he demonstrated around the fire each night. If I couldn't change my perception, at least I could spar with him. I had impeccable reflexes. But of course, Talia said, I had thousands of hours of practice growing up in the desert with the mystics. I learned the Judah, his lion, liked me. Enough to let me pet him and use his belly as a pillow. I quickly fell in love with Judah. I learned that the albinos who lived beyond the Great Divide were vast, over 1 million strong, compared to the albinos led by Thomas of Hunter, who numbered only a few thousand. Albinos who'd followed Justin by drowning in the Red Lakes comprised 4 basic religious sects: the Elionites, the Gnostics, the Mystics, and the Circle under Thomas. The Elionites were by far the largest sect. They had developed many doctrines of what was right and what was wrong based on ancient writings once canonized as holy scriptures. But they missed the point of these writings, Talia said. They clung to the world of flesh and bone and thus were bound to the world of polarity as much as the Horde. They, like the Horde, used the sword if they believed it suited Elion's purpose as interpreted by them. They believed Elion would one day rid the world of all Horde and all heretics who refused to embrace their holy doctrines. The Gnostics were a splinter group who argued that all flesh was either evil or of no consequence. They claimed Justin couldn't have existed in the flesh because flesh was evil. In cursing the material world, they made the material world their enemy, and thus were enslaved to struggle. The Circle under Thomas of Hunter were deeply loving albinos, who longed to be mystics without yet knowing it. Then there were the mystics, 49, including me, seen as the worst kind of heretic by Elionites and Horde alike. "I would soon know what a mystic was," Talia said, and by "no," he meant "no," as in experience. I wasn't sure I wanted to experience being a heretic among people who lived by the sword. I learned that it was Paulus, Paul the Apostle, who'd coined the term in Christi. He'd used the term more than any other designation in his speaking and writing. "Without it, nothing made sense," Talia said. It was also Paulus who insisted that experiencing in Christi was done by fixing our spiritual sight on what was unseen. That is, the eternal self, not on what was seen. That is, the identity of our earthen vessels. "If you lose your eyes, are you less than a person with good working eyes?" Talia asked me once. "Of course not." "And what if you lose the function of part of your brain?" I shook my head, thinking of those born with disabilities. "No." "How about all of your brain?" I thought about it, but didn't respond. Who would I be without all of my brain? "Before you were in the womb, Elion knew you. When you know yourself as Elion knew you before you were born, then you will know your truest self. This is the unseen, not your earthen vessel, which is seen." This was the task I was trying and failing to do. So, as I said, I did learn about many things, but I still couldn't see the way he saw. In fact, if I knew any lesson in those 5 long days of travel toward the Great Divide, it was how little I could see. I felt rather helpless, even knowing that this was Talia's intention. With each passing day, my frustration at not being able to see the unseen grew. It spread like a dark fog, which in turn drew me even deeper into frustration, to the point where trying to fix my eyes on the unseen began to feel like a cruel joke. I finally caved in on the 6th night. We were in the heavily wooded slopes that led up the final mountain range before the Great Divide Pass, which we would reach early the next morning. "The Horde were gaining," Talia said. "We had to hurry." "What will happen when we reach the pass?" I asked. "You keep talking about the Great Divide, and I'm beginning to wonder if it's some kind of metaphorical divide in my mind. Where are we going beyond it?"
"Not we, daughter. You."
"Without you?"
The thought terrified me.
"You will see."
He'd given the same answer to 100 different questions, but when he said it then, my resolve to be a good, diligent student failed me completely.
"No," I said, half under my breath. "I don't think I am going to see."
He was leading me by 5 paces, following Judah. They both stopped at the sound of my words. Judah turned his big head and looked back at me. Talia did not. His mount snorted once, then continued up the pathless route where Judah led us. His ignoring me only sent more blood up my neck.
"It's been 6 days, and I'm not seeing anything."
He continued on as if I hadn't spoken, much less snapped at him. My mare ambled forward, following his.
Have you ever stopped to consider my predicament for a second? Let me see if I have this right. My parents were killed when I was 3 years old, and I was raised by heretics, none of whom I know, who live in the high desert somewhere. With every word, the injustice of my predicament deepened. I don't even know who I am, because I was kidnapped and poisoned by the Horde. I'm totally lost here, and you just want me to see what can't be seen? How?
In Christi is all. In Christi is in all.
In Christi is all? You might as well say the moon is the sun. It sounds like some New Age nonsense Simon warned us about.
That ancient philosophy you call New Age was just another label, and it, like all religion, was mostly bound in attachment to earthen vessels. Heavens, no. We don't deal in magic, but fix our eyes on the unseen, beyond labels and the judgments of earthen vessels.
I let the rush of emotion take me away. Have you stopped to listen to yourself? How can you fix your eyes on anything that by definition can't be seen?
It is the only way to know truth, blind one.
Do you know what I do know to be true? At this very moment, I'm asleep in a bed in Eden, Utah. The world's falling apart around me there. Vlad Smith wants to kill me.
No, he wants to bind this world to the lasting darkness by getting you to betray who you really are.
He corrected. He was goading me. I knew that. But I was so fixated on presenting evidence for the injustices in my life that I plowed forward. Did I ask for any of this? Did I ask to be born blind? Did I ask for my mother to die during childbirth? Did I ask to be a mystic? Did I ask to be chosen?
Feeling a little lost, are we?
He asked, totally unconcerned. Stop it! I pulled my mount to a halt. Just stop all of this.
If we stop now, we only give Jacob an advantage. You have a mission. For that mission, you will need to find all 5 seals before the appointed time, the most important being the 5th.
He continued up the path, slouched in his saddle, as if on a lazy Sunday afternoon ride through the woods.
Your mission is far too critical.
He said more, but I lost his words to my thoughts. I felt like I was in a nightmare again. He still hadn't told me when the appointed time was. In the darkness that swallowed me, I was only the young blind girl being crushed by Shadow Man's threats. And now Talia would be leaving me? Please. My anger fell away, replaced by desperation. Tears blurred my vision. Talia, please. He stopped his mount, then slowly turned his horse back and studied me.
Now you're getting somewhere, he said.
I wanted to tell him that he was wrong, but a boulder was lodged in my throat.
Getting lost is part of the journey. When you have lost something, such as your identity, it is still yours, only misplaced and forgotten. Such is the state of all. The question now is, how long do you want to stay lost, my dear little prodigal?
Getting lost is part of the journey. Justin had said that my life of pervasive fear was part of my journey. I cleared my throat. I don't want to be lost.
What would you give to find the forgotten way?
Everything. Thunder rumbled in the distance. Talia dipped his head, then scanned the forest around us.
Tell me what you see here.
I looked around, hoping to see more than trees, but I was blind to all but the darkening of the sky, now billowing with ominous clouds.
Do you see the valley to our right?
He asked. A snicker sounded from the trees there, and I twisted in my saddle. I could hardly mistake the sound of Shiitake. No. Did you hear that?
Do you see the cliff directly ahead of us? He asked.
We were headed for a cliff?
No. The sky above the canopy flashed with light.
Remember this. In every moment, you manifest what you believe. You place your faith in one system or the other, not both. Will you be blind and see darkness, or will you see and know light?
Blind?
Fear gripped me.
Why do you say that? Of course I don't want to be blind.
Talia turned his mount away from me.
We shall see.
He clicked, and the stallion took off in a fast trot, then a gallop, weaving between trees as Talia's cloak flowed behind.
Hurry, daughter. Ignore them. The time is closing in. Follow me.
The air filled with the clicking and hissing of a dozen shiitake. Red eyes blinked to life in the treetops on either side. Wind gusted through the canopy.
Talia!
Ride. Ride like you've never ridden before. Straight ahead. Whatever you do, don't stop when you see the cliff. Over it, daughter. Over it.
He was pulling away from me, hard on the heels of Judah. Then they vanished into the trees, out of sight. All I could see were shiitake, hundreds now, streaking for me with claws extended and fangs gaping, and I was sure they were coming for my eyes. I dug my heels into my mare's flank and took off straight ahead.
Talia!
Gale force winds roared. No rain.
The first shiitake to reach me nipped my head and I screamed, desperate to keep them from my eyes, swatting wildly as my horse tore through the trees. But then they were on me like a swarm of flies.
Talia!
I could just hear the cry of his voice far ahead, but I couldn't make out his words above the winds. I rode faster, head down, then faster, slapping the mare's rump as she dodged trees at breakneck speed. Another shiitake made contact with me, this one with its wing, nearly knocking me from my mount. I hugged her neck and held on. A break in the trees revealed a long valley to my right. Dark clouds boiled overhead, but it was the movement below that shut down my breathing. The trees were moving with thousands of the black beasts, surging to join those now diving at me. A talon grazed my cheek, and I screamed again. I was a girl accustomed to nightmares, but the thought of losing the sight I had just gained filled me with fresh terror. I threw my left arm over my eyes. Still, the shiitake screeched, deafening me to all but those cries cutting deeply into my nerves. Still, the storm roared about me, winds and black sky without rain. Still, I raced on, screaming with them, wildly swinging one arm as I clung to the mare's neck with the other. The large black bats nipped at me, pulled at my tunic, smacked into my arm, threatened to gouge out my eyes. I suddenly broke from the trees and saw past my arm. I could see the mountain peak in the distance, a few hours' ride. The Great Divide. I lowered my gaze. Talia had pulled up on a flat outcropping of 100 yards ahead. Hair and robe streaming in the wind. Relief flooded me. Then I saw the wide gap between us. 50 paces ahead. The cliff. Panic abruptly dismissed my relief. I had two choices. The first and only reasonable course was to pull up while I still had time and take my chances with the shiitake. The second was to do as Talia had said, but I didn't see how my horse could cross such a wide gap. I went anyway, beyond reason now, desperate to be free from the threat of blindness. My fear fell from me like shattered shackles 10 paces from the cliff, at the point of no return when I accepted certain death. I simply closed my eyes and let my mount leap. Then soar. 20 feet. 5 seconds. But to me it felt like an eternity. And in that eternity, I was a bird who had no fear of falling to the ground. The mare landed on the far side, clambered up the incline, and came to a jarring halt on the ledge next to Talia's stallion. I could hear the hissing and clicking of the shiitake above the wind and rain. They'd stayed in the trees. Talia was already on the ground, snatching his bundle of books from the saddlebag.
"Hurry,"
he urged, striding toward the ledge that overlooked the valley. Buzzing with exhilaration, I dropped to the ground and ran after him. In that moment, I felt that if I jumped off the ledge on which he stood, I would discover I had wings and could fly. Breathing hard, I gazed over the vista of rolling wooded lands that gave way to desert. Beyond the desert, I could see the lower mountain range we had crossed 2 days earlier, all of it capped by a black lid of a sky. Millions of shiitake teemed over the canopy, a living carpet of death. I stared, dumbfounded. The shadow of death. Talia faced me, wind tugging at his flapping robe.
"Are you ready?"
"For what?"
"To understand why, though albino, you are powerless in this life like so many. Why seeing, they do not see, as Justin said."
I stared, wide-eyed. "Yes."
"Blind, you see in fear, yes?"
"Yes."
"But as you rise up the mountain, your view of all that is below can change. So it is with the world of the spirit. At the lower consciousness of polarity, you feel fear. But at the higher consciousness of love, what once caused you fear falls away. There is no fear in love. Only as you experience that love can you know it rather than know about it. Do you see it?"
I stared at the valley.
"I see them, the darkness, and it masters you. There are two systems at work in this plane of existence, the system of fear and control, and the system of love and freedom. These two realities cohabitate at all times, though most experience only one. There is the realm of polarity, the law, in which all living things must forcefully protect against what they fear, trading and fighting, back and forth, up and down, winning and losing. And the realm of love, a grace that is beyond polarity, in which there is no battle, no fear, only love. No darkness, only light, because it is finished. The Lamb has overcome." He looked out over the vista. "Can you see the light?"
"Did I? I almost thought I could. I certainly understood the teaching."
"Two systems," he rushed on, lifting his fingers to the air. "As it is written, one kingdom is a dimension seen with earthly eyes, the other realm is unseen by earthly eyes. In the first you struggle with fear, in the other you're already complete, risen in Christi and beyond harm. In the first you live in a temporary earthen vessel, desperate to avoid the shadow of death. In the other you are an eternal being, beyond death. You can align yourself with only one of these masters in any given moment."
"Earthen vessel," I breathed.
He gestured to my body. "Earthen vessel, jar of clay, costume, the mask you believe yourself to be. Show me your hand."
I held it out.
"Is this beautiful flesh you? Are you these fingernails, so that when you cut them you fall to the ground? Are you your hair, your cells, dying by the millions every moment? Are you your clothes, your sweat, your fingers?"
"No."
"Are you your memories, snatched from you so easily by poison or a blow to the head?"
"Never."
"Are you your emotions and thoughts?"
"Never."
"These are all part of your earthen vessel, a beautiful gift that is here today and gone tomorrow,
protecting yourself from death is only a temporary and utterly futile war you wage in polarity until your earthen vessel finally dies and you discover death always was only a shadow. There is no death. There is no darkness in light. It is finished. In Christi is all. In Christi is in all. I didn't really understand it all, but my heart and mind soared with his words. And the Rausch? I asked, mesmerized. The Rausch and the Shiitake are all a part of polarity, bound in the knowledge of good and evil. Like all albino, all horde, all humans, all the world bound by time and space. Talia clapped his hands and snatched his fingers into two fists held out before him. Two systems, two selves. One that is temporal and bound in polarity, and one that is eternal and in Christi, only temporarily experiencing life in this earthen vessel. A blink in the scope of eternity. One in blood, one in light, just as Justin showed you when he gave you the stone. Do you understand? My breathing was thick. I felt like I was leaping into a whole new world, yet unseen by me. I think so. Do you, with Yeshua, want to sleep in peace as the troubles rise like a storm to crush you? Do you want to see beyond this storm that causes fear? Really see? Yes. My voice was unsteady. Will you see what is unseen, daughter, past the illusion of fear? Will you fix your attention on what is unseen, not on what is seen by the eyes in your head? He sank to one knee and withdrew one of the books from his bundle. I knelt beside him and stared at it for the first time. On its ancient leather cover were etched these words, The Writings of Jonin and Paulus, a book of history. Put your hand on the cover, he whispered. Let the scales fall from your eyes. A hot breeze swept in from the distant desert and blew my hair off my shoulders. I lowered my hand and gently placed it on the cover. The moment my fingers made contact with the leather, my mind was blown open and I saw. I saw because I was suddenly above my body, staring down at myself kneeling there on the outcropping next to Talia. I was staring at me. I was the eye who was staring down at me, which was just my temporary earthen vessel. Like a costume I lived in for a short time. The atoms and cells that made up the bodies below me were held in place by swirling energies like clay or dust gathered by a force field. A hot wind hit me full in the face, carrying on it the distant sound of children giggling. Other sounds filled my ears, birdsong and falling water, like a distant downpour. Faint music. High-pitched strings. The tones grew, as if angels were singing in long, unbroken notes that vibrated through my body. My bones resonated in perfect alignment, like a tuning fork that vibrated in perfect pitch. A nearly irresistible urge to join in that song pulled at me like an ancient memory. I lifted my eyes and saw the valley below us. A moment ago it had been filled with terrible winds and darkness and shiitake. Now it brimmed with forests and green meadows sprinkled with brilliant patches of red and yellow and blue flowers. A village lay nestled in a shallow valley at the center, maybe 30 homes in all. A tall thrall hugged the far side of the village. All of this I saw in a single glance. But it was the color of the houses and the trees that held my focus. They were colored. Many brown trunks, yes, but also blue and red and gold. It was a colored forest, enchanted with wonder and beauty, the likes of which I had never seen, at least not that I could remember. My eyes were drawn to a large waterfall on a far cliff, cascading down the sheer rock face like oil that shone in colored hues as the light reflected off its surface. At the bottom of that waterfall was a lake with a sandy white shore. This was the world Samuel had told me about, the one before evil had come. And then I knew. I had been in those waters. I had come from this valley. This was my home. "The scales fall from your eyes, and now you see," I heard Talia cry out. "The valley of the shadow of death and the valley of Justin's kingdom are both here. Thus the same valley, within. Your perception is the lamp that reveals to you one or the other. In any given moment, you will see love and innocence, or you will see fear and grievance. Not both. There is no fear in love. There is no darkness in light." I was seeing, and in that seeing, the power of love flooded my body, a love in which there was no fear or darkness. From Elion's perspective, there was no problem. There never had been one. Origin is infinite. Problems were experienced only in polarity, where the me below was making them, identifying with them, clinging to them, empowering them through my faith in them. I had made them my God. "Hello, dear daughter." The voice spoke tenderly to the Rochelle on the ground, and I couldn't tell if it was male or female, only that it filled Rochelle with wonder and deep longing. What if it was my mother? "Do you want to know who you are?" The voice washed through Rochelle, and I saw that she was sobbing. "Yes," the me who still had her hand on the book said. It spoke again, and Rochelle trembled with each word. "I will show you that I am in you, and you are in me, joined as one, dear one. In Christi is all. In Christi is in all. Joined as one in spirit, not in flesh." But I already knew this, I realized. I, meaning the me who was looking down at Rochelle. Only Rochelle didn't know. She'd been born blind to that realization. The voice was tender, like a mother's, comforting Rochelle so that she could know her unseen self, the unseen me, who was joined with her creator. I looked to my right, half expecting to see my mother looking down at Rochelle. But I only saw the shimmering air, and I doubted the voice actually belonged to a mother. "What is known that cannot be named?" I blinked. It came again, fading. "What is known that cannot be named? Daughter." The world I saw vanished, and I gasped. I was back in my body, kneeling over the book of history. Talia had pulled my hand free. I frantically looked around, searching for any sign of the dimension I'd just glimpsed. The valley I saw instead was once more dark, dim, a shadow of its true state. The storm was gone, as were the Shiitake. "You saw," Talia said. I lifted my hand and stared at it. 5 fingers. But this wasn't really me, was it? This was my temporal earthen vessel, a jar of clay. I nodded slowly, wondering why I could no longer see it as plainly as I had only a moment ago. "Now we see through a glass dimly." Polarity did that. "Yes," I managed.
"And you heard?"
I looked up at Talia as fresh, silent tears slipped down my cheeks. "I thought it was my mother at first."
"Neither male nor female.
You say you heard it as a woman?
I couldn't tell. Just a voice.
Your helper and comforter.
He stared deep into my eyes.
In your Old Testament, the Holy Spirit is always feminine. In many languages, like Greek, there is no feminine word for spirit. So most humans translate the Holy Spirit as an it or he. Labels. In truth, the infinite has no gender, nor is there any separation between the aspects of Elion. We identify with three aspects: Father, Spirit, and Son. But they are one, so that if you see one, you see them all.
No male or female.
These are metaphors. There is no male or female in Christi. Elion is one. Revealing your union with Elion is the Spirit's primary purpose now, as Yeshua first taught.
Can I call the voice my mother?
He's infinite. You'll hear in terms that are personal to you and draw you into intimate awareness of who you are as the light. It isn't the place of any human to condemn your union with Elion.
He paused.
The important thing to remember is this. The self-righteousness of the earthen vessel is like filthy rags, used up and worthless, like the law. But that isn't who you are in union with Elion. You are the light. Yes?
Yes.
I was swimming in wonder. To deny your identity as the light, one with Elion, is to blaspheme the Spirit, who reveals your union with the divine light. In that state of denial, you will find yourself unforgiven, not by Elion, but by yourself. Thus, they call it the unforgivable sin, unforgiven by you. Elion will not override your free will. You will see yourself either as light or in darkness. In truth, you are the light, as Yeshua taught. When you feel lost, know that it is always because you are covering up your identity as the light with your denial of it, like hiding your light under a basket.
A basket. My earthen vessel.
He dipped his head. Life in polarity occurs in cycles of remembering and forgetting, often many times in a day. Remember who you are. It's the only way to find the peace of God in this life.
I looked back at the valley, now smothered in shadows as the sun set. No shiitake, just trees and cliffs. I saw a colored forest, a village, and a lake.
His eyes were bright, and he smiled. You saw your home, not so far from here beyond the Great Divide. The realm of mystics. You will see them soon.
The realm of mystics,
I said, liking the sound.
My home.
And now I can tell you, it's this very realm that both Horde and Albino will attempt to destroy in the coming war. If you don't find the five seals of truth before that appointed time, all will be lost. You must find all five before the realm of mystics is crushed.
I couldn't understand why anyone would want to destroy the mystics, nor how I could find all five seals in time. But in that moment of wonder, none of it concerned me, even though I knew it should. Maybe that's why he'd waited to tell me.
Do you understand? He asked, searching my eyes.
Yes.
Talia slipped the book back into the leather cloth, and we stood, he as a man on a mission, I, unsteady, lost in thoughts of that valley I'd seen.
I have the second riddle, I said.
Riddle? You mean the finger?
Finger? No, a riddle. A clue.
We call it a finger. It points the way, like a finger that points to the sun. It isn't the sun.